Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club.
Welcome, everybody, to the Commonwealth Club. And this event is in conjunction with SACHI, the Society for the Arts and Cultural Heritage of India. We're old friends. We've done programs going back to 2009, I believe, before. So we hope that you enjoy this. We have Bob Del Bonta. Did I get that right? Okay. Who is a scholar in this field. We did a program here for Humanities West, another organization that I do stuff for, which was on the Taj Mahal that had Catherine Asher beamed in from Minnesota, and somebody that Bob has worked with before. And we've done other programs on and off about the culture of India, something that I've been interested in since I was about 14. So how do you get interested in something that's all over the map, right? So I got interested because I was watching Johnny Carson, of all things. So who can place my age and what might have happened on Johnny Carson when I was in 1967?
The Great Carnage.
George, well, almost very close. Well, so why was George Harrison interested? Right, and he learned to play the sitar and everything. That's correct. And the person that he studied with in India was? Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. Right. And Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was on Johnny Carson when I was 14 because of the Beatles. And 4 years later, I went and studied with him, and I ended up in Switzerland studying with him and so on and so forth. So I was a couple years behind the Beatles. But anyway, it's the weirdest thing that that can get you started on almost anything. And so we hope that you really enjoy this tonight. One of the great scholars in Indian art is here. And did you say that was all right to say that?
I said, I don't know about that.
Oh, okay. Well, with an asterisk, one of the great scholars of India art is here. So enjoy. And we'll have questions as usual afterwards. And if you have questions, you can either ask them. I'll bring a microphone right to you so that everybody can hear you. And if you don't want to ask the question in front of everybody, but you can write it down on a card, just let me know and I'll get a card for you to write it down. Okay?
Well, I can honestly say that I was interested in India before you were. Because I was probably 10 years old. But anyway, that's a different story. Well, today I want to talk about Shiva dancing. Those of you that have already seen the Beyond Bollywood show have seen a few images of Shiva, but obviously they didn't want the show to be, it wasn't going to be about Shiva, and so it was fairly limited, and limited mostly to the image that you see when you go into the show. Presumably, I haven't seen the show yet. I'll be going through with the curator on Thursday. But the Nataraj on the left is from Virginia, and that's the one in the show. The one on the right is actually in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Now, I'm going to start with this image and then actually go off on tangents, and that's a plural tangent. And this is an image that actually is based on a particular image in Chidambaram that developed over time in South India. It's known as the Ananda Tandava, and it's considered it's translated either as a dance of bliss or the dance of delight. There are lots and lots of dances that Shiva does. This one has a very particular meaning, or let's say lots of different meanings. And that's one thing that you'll see in the lecture is that for virtually every image, one can tell a different story. And there's different meanings to things. The image, if you look at the larger image, the ring of fire actually has to do with sort of everything, the cosmos. The fire has to do with the destruction, which is part of Shiva's mission. He is dancing both for creation and destruction. And this is something that goes on continually. And this is not just for Shiva. This is true of all of the Indian developed religions. There's a cyclic theory going on constantly. He holds in his back hand, his back right hand, he holds the damaru, which is a little drum, a two-sided drum. With that, he creates the rhythm of this dance. And so it's the rhythm of this whole creation and destruction. In his right back hand, he holds the fire. His right front hand is an abhaya mudra, which is one of reassurance. And his leg actually, and his hand and his leg in the front are actually basically letting you then come and witness this thing. There's other things going on. The hair that going out actually has to do with the descent of the Ganges. And this in this image, we interpret that as sort of goodness coming down from the heavens. He also, we'll just see it. He also is standing on a dwarf. And he's not the only image of Shiva that does that. There's an image called Dakshinamurti, which is the form of in the south that he's really related to. It's a teaching position. But the point is that both of them actually face south. The Chidambaram image faces south, which is peculiar. Most images will be facing east. And a few, you know, death rituals and stuff will face west. But south is something that probably relates to the fact that this is specifically a southern iconography. If you find it in the north, they're very late and they're just copying this whole tradition. But it's Dakshinamurti is extremely important, and I think I've brought in a couple of calendar prints because I'm very fond of them. And it gives you a sense of the people at the feet of Shiva worshiping him and listening to in the case of Dakshinamurti, listening to his sermons, and in the case of Nataraj, it's you know, you're witnessing this creation and destruction. Now the dwarf is actually he's usually interpreted as a dwarf of ignorance or delusion, and so Shiva in both situations is sort of keeping him at bay for the sake of mankind. And the dwarf actually shows up with Shiva in a number of different iconographies. On the right, we see Yamantaka, which means the end of Yama, and then Yama is the god of death. And again, there's a dwarf-like figure. But in this case, you would interpret it not as ignorance, but as, you know, death. And at the same time, Yama is also considered Kala, so he's time as well. So it's putting an end to time. if you look to the different Puranas, all the different tales, there are tons of variations of virtually all of these tales. Some coming up the variations are quite dramatic. Now, another aspect of the Shiva Nataraj that you don't pick up on immediately is the fact that the Shiva is actually male and female. And it relates to a form of a Shiva called Arunarishvara, which actually means the god, Ishvara, that is not half woman, but he's also woman. The point is that it's not a complete dichotomy. The point is that he is actually both. And this is something that shows up constantly, either in an image that, like on the left, where it's very specifically that one half of the image is female and one half is male. The point is in the Shiva Nataraj and other images of Shiva, this is stated by the earrings that he wears. So he wears a female earring on his left ear and a male earring on the right. And one has to be conscious of this, of the fact that he's a little bit of both, or all of both, really. And that he's combined, but he's also separate very often. And the painting on the left, I believe, is in the exhibition. It's a very well-known painting. The the ceiling, actually, this is a ceiling on the right that was done in the Pallava period near Kurnool. It's actually from a temple that had to be moved because of one big dam project many years ago. And the nice thing is it was reconstructed and everything's nicely cleaned and stuff. And I actually only received this image of not just a few weeks ago from this Corina Wessels Matheson, who she and Padma Kaimal have written the most recent really good articles about Shiva Nataraj. And they're both in the bibliography of the catalog. And then Padma wrote an article on the Matrika, which are actually suggested by the painting on the left. Shiva very often has to kill demons, and he tends to dance when he does that. And I mean, various other gods and goddesses do that as well. And we'll be seeing an iconography with him that's a very, very prominent one, where the Matrikas, the mothers, who are created by Kali, actually help him out. And so in some ways, I see this painting as a sort of a dance after they've killed Andaka or one of these other asuras or demons. I just wanted to bring, I think this is a great sculpture, and we'll be coming back to it for other reasons in a bit. But you see Shiva dancing, obviously is much larger. Kali is on to his right dancing as well. And probably Parvati, one of the names for his consort, is there with a small child. Perhaps it's Skanda, one of their children, perhaps not. Now, one can't see the actual original, it's not the original, but the specific Nataraja at Chidambaram. One can't visit it. I presume if you're high in Brahman, you can. You've handed over enough bakshish for the Brahmins at the temple. But there's lots and lots of copies of it. And then they're placed into temples or in subsidiary shrines. This painting here on the left is actually painted at Madurai, which is, of course, one of the other very important temples in South India. And it's actually painted on, when you face it, you're facing south. So you're actually facing Chidambaram itself. And what's interesting about it is that he's not dancing alone. And presumably at Chidambaram, doesn't dance alone. Presumably there is also a small Kali image that dances with him. And so, you can hardly make it out on the left, but I blew it up. So you realize that she's there as well. And so the idea of him, this thing is going to fall off. The idea of him, her, of Kali being an intrinsic part of Shiva is a sort of a constant, whether she's going to be active like she is as Kali, or she'll be passive as Uma or Parvati or one of the other names that his consort goes by. Now, leading up to the Nataraj image, the iconography, there's a whole series of sculptures in the south of Shiva dancing. Usually he's only lifting his legs a bit. The image on the right, I think, is from Ellora, one of the many caves, the Shaivite caves at Ellora. And it's very similar to what we see farther south. So this is like maybe 100 years or 200 years later than the one on the left. The one of the few other images of Shiva in the exhibition is this image from LACMA, from the LA County Museum of Art. And this is another feature about him is that he is ithyphallic, which we won't go into today. That's a whole different aspect of Shiva. Again, there's also this sexuality going on. The female parts, the male parts. He encompasses all everything, and that's what the dance of the Shiva Nataraj does. The same thing. I mean, it encompasses all creation and all destruction and all aspects of life and the cosmos. The images that are often discussed that have his leg getting higher are the image on the left from a much damaged image from Elephanta in the Bay of Bengal, the Bay of Bombay, where you can see the leg is lifted more than what we see on the right. The right image is probably my favorite dancing Shiva from the caves of Badami. That's a Chalukya image. I mean, it just has great life. And I mean, Indians were the best sculptors in the world. Don't tell Michelangelo that. But Shiva Nataraj was actually an inspiration to Rodin. And there was a French publication that Kumaraswamy had put out early on where Rodin wrote a preface. And he was so struck by the fact that that every silhouettes were all, they all worked. You didn't have to have just a front. So that from all angles, he felt that it was, a sublime work of art. And so he was then working, trying to follow that tradition in his own work. So here you can see that the leg is lifting. Now, he dances everywhere, and often he dances with other people. This is a cave, one of the subsidiary caves at the big cave site of Ellora, where he's actually dancing. On the left, we see him on one side of a long gallery, and on the right, we see this skeletal figure. The long wall is actually the Sapta Matrika, the seven mothers. And it starts with a... it also has a Ganesh at one end. And so Shiva is always constant. And the seven mothers, are all emanations of Kali or Chandi or whatever you want to call her. There's, again, there's a million names for all of these gods. Now, I find the skeletal figure peculiar, and I wonder whether it could be either Kala or Yama relating to this, the fact that Shiva has put an end to both time and death. But at the same time, there will be seen a character in just a bit that would be a skeletal figure dancing. Here, this figure doesn't quite dance, but... It's an interesting combination. And the point is that many of these iconographies from this period are really difficult to completely figure out. And a lot of scholars have either been very fanciful or less fanciful in trying to figure them out. And I'm actually only started thinking about this skeletal figure quite recently, like getting ready for this lecture. But... It's an interesting combination. Now, Shiva also very often dances when he kills demons. And obviously that I would think that's from glee or whatever. He works himself up to a frenzy. I don't know. I mean, he's not taking hashish or anything. But and one of those is when he kills Andakasur. And Andakasur is on the left. Andakasur is an interesting character because I checked I think there were seven different Purans, and the stories are all a little different. But the one that Stella Kramersh had picked up on when she did her Manifestations of Shiva exhibit, which was part one of the great exhibits ever done in this country, or worldwide, I would think. She picked the one where Andaka is actually considered Shiva's and Parvati's son. And the way the point is that Shiva and Parvati, we always talk about two sons, Skanda or Kartikeya, whatever we want to call him, and Ganesh. But neither of them are really their children. I mean, they don't procreate. These children appear, either from the sweat of Parvati's body or whatever. In this case, Andaka actually appears because Shiva was meditating, and Parvati went behind him and thought, oh, I'm going to scare him. And she covered his eyes, all three of them. And it made her hand sweat. And the sweat then hit the ground, and this grotesque blind creature showed up, who then became Andakasur. Ultimately, he was the cousin of a very famous, he was raised by one of the great demons in Vaishnava iconography. The Vishu killed two great demons early on. And he was raised by that figure. And then he fell in love when he saw Parvati, not knowing that it was basically his mother. So he then started fighting with the gods, eating all of the gods, and Shiva then had to try to kill him, and he actually put him on his trident and lifted him up. But as he bled, the drops of blood all turned into little Andakas. And so the Matrika, this is when the seven mothers, or probably more mothers in this case because there's so much blood, they all had to come and then eat up the blood to keep these. I mean, this is true in Greek mythology as well. You have these blood turning into terrible demons or dinosaurs or whatever. And then on the right, what's interesting, this is another demon that he kills, and that's the Gajasur. And this is a demon that turned himself into an elephant and was rampaging around and, again, trying to kill all the gods, etc. And Shiva then had to kill the elephant, and then he skinned the elephant, and then he danced within it. And what's interesting is that in this image, here's Andaka. So Andaka then becomes a great devotee of Shiva. I mean, he's not only been killed, and then he turns into this skeletal figure, but he's just constantly thinking about Shiva, and by thinking about the god, he becomes one of his most, important, not admirers, but worshippers. And so he ends up dancing with his father very often in sculpture in the South. And this is something that Stella Kramersh had picked up on. Images of this Gaja Samhara Murti, of Shiva dancing within the skin of the the elephant is found throughout South India. You find it in painting. This is a painting that actually is in the Asian Art Museum. And there's other interesting paintings of what we call company school. These paintings were actually done for European travelers to India, often in albums. And we find a great number of these. And there's also some fabulous bronzes of this subject. It's one of my favorite iconographies. Now, again, Shiva dances all the time. And there are a great number of these wonderful paintings, mostly from the Pari Hills, of him dancing with various other gods, goddesses, other types of creatures. Here we have his son Ganesh, the elephant-headed. God playing an instrument and his wife Parvati playing a sitar or it's probably a Rudra Veena, and then various other demons and his second son Skanda Kartikeya with his five heads is seen in this as well. And it's obviously it was a popular sort of composition, and I found quite a number of drawings that are based and paintings that are based on this same thing. And what's interesting about him, and I was going to mention it when I first saw him next to the dancing in the elephant skin, is that he's wearing the elephant skin. It's behind him in both the drawing and the painting. And this is the painting, the painting that advertised the show also has the elephant skin. he has an elephant skin plus a tiger skin. And you often see him, and you see rishis often sitting on animal skins, tigers or leopards or whatever, which seems seems rather violent. But anyway, that's just, they can do things that we can't. Now, what's interesting about that that one ceiling that I showed at the very beginning is that something else is going on. Not only is he dancing with Kali and Parvati, presumably, and it's probably Skanda is standing next to him, but he's actually flanked by both Brahma and Vishnu. So we have this Trimurti business going on, the three forms, the three gods, that Europeans always associated with, you know, God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. They don't quite work that way, but it's an interesting. Europeans always wanted to think that, you know, this was some lost Christian sect or something, which was obviously not true. But it's a very, very common to see them together. This is a large cloth painting that was done in Andhra Pradesh, again in the south, probably in the early 60s, when this tradition of Kalamkari was revitalized by the All India Handicrafts Board. And here we see him, again, dancing on a dwarf, a rather large dwarf, and he's dancing in front of Vishnu, and Brahma is behind the image of Shiva dancing. And what's curious is that this is actually an image of Bringi. Bringi actually, after falling in love with his mother and then getting killed by, you know, as Andaka, he then tried to circumambulate Shiva, but Parvati kept getting in the way. And so he turned himself into a bee, and he flew around his head, and Parvati was always getting in the way, and he kept falling down. And so Shiva gave him a third leg so that he wouldn't fall down. And it's great. It's not an iconography you see a lot, but it's one that I'm very fond of. Because, you know, it's better than having a cane. And the thing about this trinity, if we want to call it, the Trimurti, that is, again, it's a reference all the way back to another important iconography. And again, it's an important iconography in the South India. And that's the Lingodbhava Murti, which is, it's one of the early tales of creation when, if you know the story that Shiva's, Vishnu sleeps on the serpent in the sea of milk between creations, right after destruction. He sleeps there for 1,000 years, and then creation starts. But he doesn't do the creation. A lotus grows out of his navel, and Brahma gets his hands, you know, rolls up his sleeves and creates the world. At one point, they were fighting over who really created the world. You know, I created the lotus, so I created the world. And that's when a very large linga showed up, a phallic symbol. And And Vishnu took the form of Varaha, of the boar, and he dived down into the ocean. And Brahma then took his form as the Hansa, as the goose, and flew up. And neither of them could find the end, you know, the top or the bottom. So then when they met, all of a sudden, ta-da, Shiva showed up. And so in many ways, these references are all in the back of your mind. If you know this story, you've heard it as a child, you know, at least if you were grew up in the right environment. I mean, it took me, I was probably 13 when I first read about it. But anyway, it's sort of, when you look at the iconographies, there's always all, there's much more there than just, than meets the eye. And Shiva dances. He doesn't just dance in that one position that we know as Nataraj or Natesha, which is usually pretty simple. There's actually 108 dance poses known as Karana, and they're enumerated in the Natya Shastra. And on the left, they have a conglomerate of, I guess, somebody, some modern bronze maker has, you know, made one of each, trying to sell them all. And so this is something I found on the internet with so many of them. And what's interesting is that Chidambaram, the 108 Karanas are actually sculpted. They're not sculpted with Shiva dancing. They're actually female forms on the whole. And this is this one, they're in the eastern Gopuram, the gateway to Chidambaram. They have the 108 poses that are known. And this Shiva does all of them, and presumably this is taken from I found this on the internet. Thank God for the internet. Presumably there was some manual with him dancing all of these different forms. I brought these two sheets. I only found like four, mostly for this Kalara Tandava, because I wonder whether that's who is in Ellora. But Googling that word gets you nowhere, absolutely nowhere. But I will pursue it. And the point is that there are many, many bronzes of him, and paintings some sculptures of him in these crazy poses. In fact, when we bought our house in Tucson, Arizona, 4 or 5 years ago, the people that lived in the house were rather, I call them vacuum collectors. They just bought everything. And they actually had Shiva bronze with his leg up in the air, one leg up in the air in their living room. It was grotesque, but it's, these are much nicer than that. But it was, you know, it's such a crazy thing to find in, you know, in Arizona. I mean, it would be crazy to find in San Francisco, let alone Arizona. Now, I'll just end with a little series of these. When Shiva actually, he's not just dancing when he is ready to kill a demon or after he kills a demon or out of sheer glee, he also dances for specific worshipers. On the left, he's actually dancing for Banasura. This is an episode in the, there are various tales told, but this is taken from a rather extensive Bhagavad Puran manuscript that's in the San Diego Museum of Art that I've worked on a lot. And here we see Banasura playing instruments. And he's playing the instruments, and Shiva is dancing the Tandav. And in the text actually says he's dancing the Tandav Nitya. So he's dancing that dance. Nitya would be like is the dance. And Banasura was a demon, an asura that had been such a great devotee that Shiva had given him 1,000 arms. And at this point in his life, when Shiva comes to meet him, he wants Shiva to get rid of his arms because he's discovered he can't. He's such a great fighter, but he can just fight elephants. I mean, nobody's going to fight him. And Shiva says, no, you'll have to wait. But Vishnu will cut off your arms. And that's what's interesting is this, in the case on the right, this is actually Ravana. And Ravana also is one of the most important devotees of Shiva. And he, again, he just like, well, Banasur actually doesn't die. He ends up with two arms, so he's a normal person. Ravana does die when Rama, Vishnu is Rama, then kills him. And Ravana is known in combination with Shiva mostly from this story when Shiva and Parvati are on Mount Kailas and you know it's all very beautiful and they're having a good time, and Ravana goes into a cave in the mountain and he tries to shake it to ruin the mountain, and Shiva puts his foot down and it then traps Ravana in this cave for 1,000 years. But in that process, within the cave, it's the one on the left is from the great temple at Ellora. The one on the right is from another one of the caves at the same site. And you see him trying to move the mountain. And very often in painting, you actually see him playing instruments. And to my mind, that has to do with this. While he's in the cave, he writes the Shiva Antandava Stotra, which is a series of poems of devotion to Shiva. And it's believed that Ravana, the Asura, the demon, Ravana actually wrote these poems. And this is a painting that was in an exhibition catalog that I did a number of years ago. Which was sort of like, what is going on here? And then it dawned on me that it's actually part of this series of poems. And so we see Ravana in human form at the top coming out with his little Asura friends that are all often look like, you know, really scary monsters and horned creatures. And he's coming out with offerings to offer to Shiva. And so here we see him putting the garland around his neck, and he's brought the conch and a little pot of whatever, maybe Ganga Jal or Ganges water or some such thing. And then Shiva then blesses him, and then he, Ravana then starts playing a mortal, which is a Jew's harp, a mouth organ. He plays that, and Shiva then dances, again, using the damaru, the drum, to set up the rhythm, and then Parvati then dances with him. The poem that I'm convinced this is relates to talks about the god wearing the skin of the elephant and the snake, a bejeweled snake, which it doesn't look bejeweled, but it's very clear that this is all part of this whole ambiance of Shiva not only dancing for his own pleasure, but his pleasure for, you know, devotees. And this is why presumably we can think that Nataraj is dancing for us all the time.
So now it's time to ask Bob any questions you might have. Bob, are you going to go far afield from art, or do you want to stick to just art?
Well, it depends on how far afield.
Okay, great.
I can always say no.
Yes.
Now I'm going to see if I can trip.
Hello, I'm Bob's older brother, and everyone and his twin brother is sitting right here. When we were kids, our parents used to love to buy encyclopedias, etc., and Time Life had a series on comparative religions. And the series, the Time Life one that Bob got into, was the one about Hinduism. And when he was a kid, maybe 12 or 13, he was actually drawing the dancing Shiva, and it was on the wall in his room. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Yes, well, Agni was over. Agni was on his ram over the other doorway. So just to get to dinner, everyone had to walk under these two gods.
So you didn't have pictures of Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell. Instead, you, on your wall, you had.
Well,
Eva.
It was. Was Joan singing that?
I think it was Mimi Farina, but that's.
Yeah.
Other question.
So my name is Uday, and my curiosity is more about your curiosity for Shiva. I just heard that as 13-year-old, you had Shiva on your wall. So my question is, you've analyzed a lot about Shiva, but have you analyzed your own curiosity for Shiva?
Well, my name on my email address is Bhairav, so I think I do think about Shiva quite a lot.
But have you thought why?
No, I'm not a violent creature. And Bhairav, by the way, can be quite violent. But he can also be quite beautiful.
Yes. May I just take a liberty to reason why I'm asking this is, it's funny, what a coincidence that today, one of my friends who owns a Shelby, she sent me a poem through self-analysis of why she, and I'm just going to read it and there might be some parallels here. She says, "Do I own it or does it own me? Neither it is extension of me, balancing the me I can't be with the me that I don't want to be, brash, loud, unapologetic, unrestrained and beastly. That is me it allows me to be, freeing me from the me I don't want to be. Embodying traits within me, anger, violence, representing them, making them beautiful, returning joy and release. It can be these things, so I don't have to be with it. I partner with fury." So I just found something interesting that we all, our curiosities are maybe sometimes guided by something deep inside us. And I was just wondering if you analyzed it.
Well,
it
could be, but I mean, the fact that fully a third of my work has been done on Jain iconography and art, it seems far afield, especially from Bhairav.
Have you been to the Chidambaram temple and some of these other places that you...
I've been to various temples, not Chidambaram, but I've
been to the Badami Caves.
Oh, yes, lots.
All right, yeah, the one of my favorite places.
Oh, it's...
It's dazzling.
Yeah, in the early 70s, it was even more dazzling because there was nobody there.
That's right. it's nicely developed, so if anybody, you know, people haven't been, I would recommend they go. Yeah. Of all the places in India, I would put that, the Badami caves, there's something, you just feel something.
Yeah, well, see, I had done my work in Karnataka. I actually wrote my dissertation on Hoysala architecture and sculpture.
So I'm familiar. Of course, Hampi is glorious too.
Yeah.
So in Chidambaram, when you know the images that you had of Shiva with his leg raised very high in this very awkward position, that image comes from there. The legend is from there. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah.
That's when he had the competition with Parvati when they came south and they had that dance off. Right, so Parvati was a great dancer herself. She was dancing. The sages were all praising her. Shiva gets jealous. He says, "I can outdance you," but she was able to match him pose for pose. No matter what he did, she was able to match him. Then he kind of plays dirty. So he lifts his leg in this very indecent, you know, pose, which she was too modest to do something like that. So then she says, "I won't do it," and then he wins the competition. So he really played dirty. But it was all on that granite plinth there, which still exists, and legend has it that the dance actually occurred there.
It occurred right there.
So that particular...
Yeah, Shiva obviously was never modest.
Are you saying it was the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers of 3,000 years ago?
So you touched upon the theme of recreation. So I'm still not clear which creation has priority. Is it Brahma's creation or Shiva's destruction and recreation cycle? How do they fall into place?
They don't. It all depends on who you're talking to and who's the devotee of whom. Because I just, there's an article of mine coming out on cyclic, Indic cyclic, whatever. I forget how it says, funny, one of these more rhyming titles. It was for a conference that was online out of the University of Bonn in Germany on the origins of mankind. And I was able to find early versions, even Vedic versions of different Prajapati doing the creation and before these, you know, these gods got separated out. And what's most interesting is that in some of the stories, like the, specifically the story of the Linga Bhavamurti of the big phallus showing up and Vishnu takes credit for being in the center. I mean, so I mean, they're vying for, you know, priority over the, and it just depends. I mean, if you want to follow one or the other, I mean, as a Jain, it doesn't exist. So, I mean, there is no creator. So it just, you know, things exist. They get better and they get worse and then they get better and they get worse. There's no pralaya. There's no fiery destruction that you find in both Hinduism and Buddhism. There's a time when fewer people are alive and they're sort of deformed, but they never cease to exist, you know, whereas in both Hinduism and Buddhism, they do, you know, they're no longer there. So.
Okay, so we are looking at the Shiva Nataraj image very closely these days after, you know, with the exhibition at the Asian Art Museum. And you touched upon, you know, what Rodin mentioned and how this image is so dynamic. So looking at that very dynamic aspect of Shiva with you know, the flame of destruction and the drum of creation and the whole simultaneity of that whole process that the Nataraj image shows, that simultaneously there's creation, simultaneously there's destruction. So looking at, you know, apart from all these cycles that Brahma created, and we are talking about, you know, God knows eons and eons of time. So do you interpret that image that at every moment is filled with creation and every moment is filled with destruction, and they go through all these long cycles, but every minute or every moment there is a new cycle being created, both of creation and destruction? Is that something?
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, what is time? Yeah. You know, I mean, we talk about huge numbers. And these aren't 1,000 years. These are 1,000 years of Brahma. And so how many millions of years is that? And why can't it just happen, you know?
Yes, sir. I mean, now that we are face to face with this image and talking about it every day, you know, like it's saying, okay, I mean, the simultaneity of this creation, destruction, that means all the time, that image is projecting.
Yes,
simultaneous creation, destruction, every moment, you know. I mean, it's that dynamic. It's that dynamic.
Yeah.
Is that what is coming out of the Nataraj?
I believe so. I haven't really thought about it that way, but I know that he represents, I mean, he depicts both those things, and so why can't it happen?
Yeah, happen.
It's happening in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
Hi. The images were so lovely. Thank you. I wanted to ask a couple of questions about two of the images. One is the skeletal dancing Shiva. And in the background, there are these floral motifs. Did you see them? They're very distinct. Do you know what they represent?
No, I don't.
Okay. And the other one was of the 108 Karanas from a bronze guild. Did you say that somebody had made all the 108?
Well, I mean, they're all there. I don't know whether photographed them or...
Okay.
No, it shows up, that one image shows up quite often on the internet.
I see.
And I couldn't find the actual source. Not that I was going to order 108 images.
I was just wondering if it's a particular guild. There's something written in the middle of it. So
yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Could you explain why they use 108 as a number?
It's the ultimate. And it's actually, it's a number that means infinity. It's used in all of the religions in India.
Right.
I grew up as a Jain.
Okay.
So my question is, how did Shiva came to be represented with the Shivling?
Well, that's an Indo-European thing. The phallus is always, it's essential to Indo-European religious thought. It's a creative member. Often we say that it's creative energy gives rise to creative thought. It does a million different things, but it's an aniconic form, which has a certain panache to it. Granted, we've gotten away from the full aniconic quality of Buddhist art, but it just is.
So there's not any time in history when this happened, or
we find it from day one. You find it in this valley civilization, which of course isn't Indo-European, but that's a separate issue.
Mm-hmm.
You have it in Europe, column versus the cave. You have your male and your female concepts in religion from day one.
Okay. My second question, this Tandav Nritya, that as we know, was it a particular choreographed dance, or any dance by Shiva could be called Tandav Nritya?
I believe that any dance can, since in the Bhagavad Puran, it's described that way, and I've never seen it. It's never just the Ananda Tandava. I think that Nritya just means dance, and so it's sort of like saying dance. I don't know. I'm not a linguist, so I don't know what to do with it.
Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you very much, Bob.
Okay.
That was really wonderful talk.
Thank you.
Kalpana, would you like to say something?
So our sponsors for this event are Bipin and Rekha Shah. Thank you very much.
And so ends another event at the Commonwealth Club, and it's over 120 years of enlightened discussion. Thanks a lot for coming and joining us. Nice to see a big audience.
You've been listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Hear thousands of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you like what you've heard, please consider supporting our work and help us bring 500 programs a year to listeners like you. Go to commonwealthclub.org/donate. Think your way around the world with our travel programs to exciting domestic and international destinations. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live at our events. Thank you for listening and for your support.